Hello, and welcome to Moorcroft's Means Business podcast. In this episode, we're going to be looking at work-life balance, not just a fluffy wellbeing initiative, but how it benefits the bottom line. I'm your host today. My name's Lindsay Abbott, and I'm an employment lawyer at Moorcroft's. Moorcroft's is a dynamic law firm specialising in corporate, technology, commercial property, and employment law. I'm delighted to be joined today by Jill Geik of GMG Coaching, who is a business change management specialist and goal mapping coach. Welcome, Jill.
Thank you very much for having me, Lindsay. It's good to be talking about the hot topic at the moment, I think.
Yes, so that's what we're going to be talking about today, work-life balance, not just a fluffy initiative. So I wanted to start by saying, even before the global pandemic, the benefits of having a good work-life balance have been well documented and well researched. But I think since COVID-19, this seems even more pertinent to us all. We're looking at the mental well-being of the staff or your employees, your people, but also the financial well-being of the company. So how can these two sort of seemingly polar opposites actually benefit each other? How would that work?
Well, I think, to be honest, I don't know about you, but I'm a great believer that the people is what makes your business. And so if you look after the people in your business, they will look after your clients, your customers, and the magic really happens. And I think that we're so focused on performance and control and less focused on nurturing and empowering. And if we start to focus on nurturing and empowering, then you will see a change in the way people react. But I think you have to, first of all, look at maybe what's the impact of not having a good work-life balance, and how does that impact you as a business? And like I was saying, that there's been a massive amount of research was done way before we all came into any form of lockdown. And you know, there are big numbers. I know businesses like to look at numbers. So according to Gallup, disengaged employees have a 37% higher absenteeism. That's 37% right. More likely to be off sick. They're 18% lower in their productivity, and which means to a 15% lower in profitability. So that affects your bottom line when your employees are disengaged.
That's a huge amount.
Yeah, and you translate that into a cost scenario, you're talking about the equivalent of 34% of a disengaged employee's annual salary. That's the cost impact to you of your business. So it affects your business profitability, but you're wasting, in that sense, a salary for somebody. Mm. And then there's all sorts of studies that have done that impact. And then the cost of replacing employees, people are unhappy, they leave. There's a cost and impact to employees leaving. And it's understanding what that churn rate, if you have a very high churn rate of employees, and disengagement is one side of it, and people leaving is the other, and impact on your business.
Yeah, so on the one hand, we've got people being disengaged and leaving, and then we've got disgruntled staff who stay there being unhappy. What do we sort of see happening?
Yeah, I mean, if you've got unhappy people, they tend to be negatively programmed, and they start to bring everybody down. They're disengaged, they're unhappy, then their productivity level drops, and it affects everybody. So even if you have somebody that loves their job, if Bob in the corner is always having a bit of a bitch and a moan, then everybody gets tired and exhausted, and you don't want to be there. And that's when you start to see people leaving, especially your best employees. Will, you know, people that are good will go somewhere else if the atmosphere is not right.
Yeah, that's right. It has a knock-on effect, doesn't it, to everybody?
Yeah. Actually, and I just understand it. I'm sure all of your HR professionals all know what the cost of employment is. So recruitment, the cost of recruitment. So it's not just the time and effort that you put into recruiting, and it's not just the how much you pay a recruitment agent or anything like that. It's how long it takes for a new recruit to be up and running, and the effect it has on other people in the business. So you're talking 6 to 9 months before somebody is up and running. So that's 6 to 9 months of their salary. So you have to understand the cost to the business in that sense. But it's also the impact on other people, because what will happen when someone's new, they'll need to be nurtured by other people in the team, and it affects those other people in the team. I think we've seen some of that even in lockdown, how how people have differently reacted to those, to that team environment.
Yeah, and even sort of coming out of lockdown now, not necessarily exactly the same thing, but I think now we're all starting to sort of go out again and go into restaurants and things. You can see that obviously they've had to let a lot of staff go, and now they've got new people on board and they're sort of being trained, and it takes that kind of management time, doesn't it? And you can see maybe service is a bit slower and that sort of thing when you're getting somebody new on board.
Yeah, absolutely.
What are the advantages to employees if we sort of talk about that for a bit? Work-life balance.
Yeah, so if you're, everybody's work-life balance is slightly different, but if you as an employer are interested in your employee, you allow them to have, you allow that flexibility for them to incorporate their work, their life into their work, then you actually, they like going to work because they know that it's okay to leave early on a Thursday to take their mother out, a sick mother out for tea, or to take Johnny swimming. And it's all of those kind of things that they feel more valued. And if you feel valued, and to be honest, you can pay people a lot of money, but it's feeling valued and important, and that the things that are important to you are important to your employer, that makes people become more engaged. And then they are more engaged. Their productivity goes up. They engage everybody in the team, and you get that team being much happier. So if everybody has a little bit of more connection with what's going on at home as well as at work, then you get that whole thing. There's a lot of companies doing that tick box exercise with CSR and trying to create engagement that way, but you have to really believe it and really get your employees engaged. If you find something that a charity that has direct benefit or has directly affected people in your business, then that's much more engaging. You are talking to them, you're saying we're doing this together, and it's that team effort and that feeling of belonging that's really important to people.
And that all becomes part of the culture, doesn't it?
Yeah. And then you employ, you know, if you feel valued at work, you are healthy. And if you're balanced, you are healthy. If your work life is balanced, then you are personally balanced. You are healthy. There's less absenteeism, and so that the whole downward spiral is reversed, and you get an upward spiral.
And then we start to see advantages to the business. Then, yeah. Don't we?
Yeah.
So what are the benefits to your clients who do this?
Yeah, so you get a sense of loyalty and commitment. So you get people being much more creative in their ideas. They are not stressed. So they are thinking along the lines of how can we do things better? So there's creativity comes up. They are engaged. They're happy. You can hear it in somebody's voice. You know, if you ring up some of those helplines and someone sounds like they're having a bad day, you don't want to do business with them. So you want to do business with people that are happy and engaged and becoming more enthusiastic about their role. And they start to treat your customers, your suppliers, all of your stakeholders better. And they come up with their solution providers rather than just kind of plodding along, just doing the job. So they're providing solutions. So I think you get a much better work environment for everybody.
Absolutely. I remember a query that I had from a client many years ago, not at the firm that I'm working at now, but they had an employee who was, I don't think it was that she was particularly necessarily disengaged because of anything that they were doing, but she just got that sort of character. And she was, some of the stories, they were quite amusing, that she was on the phone to suppliers and customers just being really negative, and it impacted the whole office. Yes, the impact of one negative person on a team can be big, can't it? And in the end, they had to obviously, you know, sort of take action, sort of put her through a disciplinary process. But
I think it's the same with everything, isn't it? It's that one negative review that you get. And in fact, for business, all businesses are reviewed and have stars or FIFO or whatever it is. And it's that one negative review that you have that it takes a lot of work to fight over, to reverse,
right,
doesn't it?
And everything's so visible now, isn't it? We can all just go straight online and leave that kind of review if we wanted to. Or
yeah, and the reviews are even on the recruitment website. So so if you treat your people well, because it has an impact after they've left as well. So it's about having a really good relationship with your employees before, during and after their employment, which is really critical.
Yeah. So looking at that in practice, what do employers actually need to think about on a practical level? How do you do that?
And certainly as you go back into, as we're coming out of lockdown and people are coming back into the work environment and ramping up if they haven't already been. So the people that have been working all through lockdown are very highly stressed. It's been a very stressful situation for them. They are having to maybe travel on public transport, be in environments that they didn't feel safe in. And it's about making sure that they feel safe and that you give them that you engage with them. You have to talk to people. Everybody's work-life balance is different and you need to talk to them. For the people that have been at home, I think almost everybody you talk to now has reevaluated what's important to them. And maybe those people that have spent more time at home, not 2 hours commuting to and from work, they have had a chance to see, spend time with their children, with their partners, and actually want to do more of that. You know, they want to be able to go out, take the dog for a walk. They want to be able to go cycle. They want to be able to walk at lunchtime. So it's understanding what people want now. And the employers that engage the most with their team now and really ask those questions about what is it that you want. And, you know, and be aware that everybody's going to want something different. Everybody's reevaluated what's important to them, and it's looking at how you can incorporate what's important to them into their daily life. And it's being clear what the parameters are. I think it's very important that employers set clear parameters for every department and every manager, because I think the one thing that creates the biggest challenge is when one manager allows it and another doesn't. So that, you know, at your manager's discretion policy can be quite diverse, challenging, really.
Yes, yeah. We often have to give legal advice on policies that are at discretion, because sometimes that's open for interpretation, isn't it? But yes, so mainly it's communication, isn't it? Communication, realizing that it's not one size fits all, and having parameters, having boundaries.
Yeah, absolutely. And you there are certain departments, you know, if you're a customer service facing thing and you have a phone line that's open from 8 in the morning till 6 at night, then obviously within that it's a little bit harder to be flexible. But it's about looking at how you can create a somebody that maybe every 14 days they have half a day which they spend on admin, or so that can be flexible. So it's about how you adapt those things into your business and become flexible. And making people aware of what's important to them. I think there's an awful lot of people that maybe are not even aware what work-life balance is and what they need to do to achieve it. So I think that certainly if you've been working from home, there are some people that have felt a little bit distance from their business, and it's how you engage them, and it's about how you create really good communication processes, and so that you talk regularly, everybody in the team has a chance to talk, all voices are heard, and that sometimes you have a meeting that's not about business, it's just about how are you.
Yeah absolutely, and knowing that you've got someone there to talk to if you need to. So what have you seen anything in particular with your clients, Jill, or just in general since COVID? Obviously now, for those who are working from home, there are no longer those barriers where you can switch off. Are you seeing clients aware of this? Do they put mechanisms in place to avoid?
No, and I think that that's really important, that employers educate their teams at every level and make people aware is that home is no is is no longer a safe place because we're in each other's living rooms, and recognizing that actually you've crossed a boundary and that you need to put that boundary back in. And if your employee doesn't do it for themselves, that you need to help them create that, so that you make sure that there's not the control. There's all sorts of software coming out about controlling how long people are online or sat at their desks. That's a very unhealthy way to work. You need to trust people initially. It's only if they abuse that trust, but you have to explain to them what that means. So if somebody needs to get up and walk around a lot, then let them walk around. Make sure that you close your laptop down at the end of the day and you put it away, especially if it's in if you don't have dedicated workspace. I would, if you can, have dedicated workspace, and that you close down, shut the door so that you walk away from the office. And there's lots of having lots of tips and tricks, and maybe as an employer talking about what those tips and tricks could look like. It could be making sure that you go for a walk after works, you finish your work day, you close down your laptop and you go out, you do something different, and that physical thing is kind of like, it's like the drive home from work. I think we all know that drive home from work is maybe where you relax, chill down, and transition from work mode to home mode. So we have to create an alternative if you're working from home, and make sure that people understand that they can block their diary for certain things. You know, it's okay to block your diary for the school pickup, and accept that, and make sure it's all about communication. It's about the employer and the employee having open communication. So within your team, being very open about it. And I think that's quite a challenge for people, particularly introverted people, being aware of what it is that they need and being able to vocalise that. So it might be a question of helping employers have a tick list or a solution, and give ideas to employee, to everybody, to within the team member, what work-life balance looks like, what is allowed and what is not allowed. So it's okay to, you still shouldn't be sat at your screen hours and hours on end. The DSE assessment says you should be getting up every hour and resting your eyes and moving around.
That's right. And I think the problem as well for a lot of us is not only are we sitting in front of our screens with our jobs, we're then getting off the screens and then we're looking at our phones or we're watching TV and stuff. And I mean, I think that's obviously down to the individual, but you've got to get outside, haven't you, every day in the fresh air. Like you've said, you've got to do that mental disconnect from work, disconnect, like a drive home, that sort of to decompress and transition. Yeah.
And I think that what you can do is, it's quite easy, is to have a little conversation, a little bit of a workshop. What do you do? How should we do this? I know people that do the whole, they walk out the front door, walk out the front door if they're at work, and they walk in and walk back in the front door if it's at work, and they walk in the back door if it's at home. So actually every morning they walk out the back door, they go for a little bit of a walk, come in the front door, sit down, do work, and at the end of the day they walk out the front door and in back in through the back door, and that is their commute to work.
My neighbour was doing the other day. I'm sure I've seen him doing that.
Or that, you know, the home office walk down the garden path. It's a really good way of separating. But I mean, you can always have some little tricks between people in the teams, have conversations about it.
I think so. Always communication.
And that you can actually help, you can use enable technology so that you can stop emails arriving at certain times. It's just because somebody sent an email doesn't mean to say you have to answer it. So it's about self-discipline and how you enable that within your business. But you have to make sure that it's okay for people to it's okay for those that like to work late to send an email, but they don't expect a response.
Yeah,
I've always done it. It drives me a little bit crazy. I've done it, worked in an office where someone would have an out of office reply, and you know that they're not there, they're away for a week or two, and you're not expecting an answer. So what you do is you send the email because it's off your to-do list, and you've passed it over, not expecting a response because you know they're on holiday, and then there's an out of office reply and then they still respond.
Well,
that's not good practice.
Yeah, and I know what you mean though, because when you've got to send an email, you just want to send it, don't you? Like you say, you're not necessarily expecting a reply, but you've got to get it out there because that's your part and you need to do it when you think of doing it.
Yeah.
But yes, that is something to overcome and to deal with it, isn't it?
Yeah.
But yeah, I wonder how things will change now. We're living with this. I say post-COVID, but we're living with it now. Mm. Do you think that work-life balance will be better or worse now, post-COVID? Or
I think that people have no choice. Employers have no choice. I found the latest study from employment where actually it was in April of this year, where they said that the number one priority for employees looking to either change their job or their career progression, the number one priority for them was work-life balance. So if you as an employer are not looking at work-life balance and taking it seriously and incorporating that into what's into the way you operate, then you will have trouble recruiting the best people. That's quite significant when that becomes the number one priority. And I think it has to get better. I think that we understand that stress is the number one killer in this country and the number one reason for sickness and absence. Because with stress comes a whole load of other things. Any underlying condition suddenly rises to the surface when you're stressed. So that actually we need to do something about it. And there are lots of ways to do it, and you need to help your employees work out what their work-life balance is for them. So it's looking at a little bit of self-development, helping your employees with their self-development, because if you help them, they'll help you back. They pay back in loyalty and commitment. So it's really engaging maybe some outside support to get that, to help people understand what work-life balance looks like for them. For some people, it's spending more time with the family. For some people, it's more sport. But some people, it's doing giving back. For other people, it's learning and developing in their career. So it's making sure that people get that balance of things within their life, and then you get the better commitment.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Jill, for joining me today. And for everyone who tunes in to listen to this episode of Moorcrofts Means Business podcast, to keep abreast of the changing legislation and business landscape, please visit our blog on our website, moorcrofts.com. Follow us on social media and subscribe to the Moorcrofts Means Business podcast via moorcroftspodcast.com and Apple Podcasts or via Spotify. Thanks again for listening, and goodbye for now.